This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control. Delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Welcome to Trapping Across America, guys. This is your host, Clint Locklear. Well, we're going to be talking about trapping and some mental aspects of trapping. And I want to play a little game today of something kind of based off of a premise from a gentleman that has Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is pretty interesting. And I want to play this game today with you called Successful Trapper, Not So Successful Trapper. And before I do that, though, I want to tell you a little bit of story. The life of a trapper is absolutely nuts sometimes. About 15 years ago, 16 years ago, I, you know, anybody that had a postage stamp piece of land, I could set a trap on, and they had a piece of fur. It didn't matter how far I had to drive, brother, I was on my way. And I got a call from somewhere about 30 miles from here, and there was these two old ladies, and you know, they were not as old then, but they were definitely up in age, sweet country, you know, I'm talking country. And they had, I don't know, together maybe 15 acres, and they live side by side. They're really good friends, and they have at the time, I don't remember a horse, but they, you know, they had the little field and the fences, and I think there might have been some goats or something like that, and chickens running around, and house cats. And house cats was the reason that I was called up there. And they really loved their outside cats. Some would come inside. They had all kind of barn cats. Both of them were widowed, as close as I could tell. And, you know, they were lonely, and the cats just kind of, you know, met that need. And there's plenty of feral cats if you're going to feed them. So they had this congregation of cats. Well, lo and behold, all of a sudden the cats started disappearing, one and two at a time. And they got dwindled down to just four or five cats. And one day, this lady looked out, and she saw the coyote running from the barn with the cat, kicking and screaming, into the woods. So she started asking around for a trapper, and somehow she ended up with me. Because this was really the day before the internet really meant anything. So I don't know how she found me, but somehow she did. So I go up there, and I set traps, and I set some snares in her fence, and we catch three, four, five coyotes off that little piece of ground, and the problem went away. Well, this year, I get a call right in the middle of, you know, of trapping and the lure season, and everything's going crazy, and they built up their herd of cats, and all of a sudden now they're back down to just like two or three, and I'm telling you, I did not have time to go mess with this, but she was so distraught and such a nice lady that I told her as soon as I can get a chance, I'll go do it. Well, I did. And now there was an addition that I don't remember last time, which is a horse. And I grew up with horses. You know, we raised Arabian quarter horse breeds. Why, I have no idea. Because, you know, you had this great big muscular quarter horse, and you basically had, you know, a crazy Taliban mindset of the Arabian horse, not just because of what the name of it is, because they were spooky, flighty, and they were really fast and unpredictable, and you never knew what was going to happen. But they were really fast to run, so we grew them. So I've grown up with horses, so that's not a big deal. I'm way more comfortable on horses than I am, say, cattle, for instance, just because I didn't grow up with them. So that's no big deal. And I go up, and it's a decent spring morning, and the weather's warmed up here. So I'm on my way to Chattanooga, so I stop by, and I've got my snare bag, and I wasn't setting traps on this one. I was just going to set the fence because they don't do the maintenance. Snaring in a barbed wire fence when it's grown up is pretty easy. So I figured that'd be the easiest way to handle this with less energy on my part. So I go up there, and I literally start setting fences. And there's no doubt they've got coyotes that are running in and out of these fences like crazy. Hairs on the fence, so I'm setting these things up. And then I look over after I'm setting one of the snares, and what I'm doing, you know, a barbed wire fence is straight up and down. Well, just because of the horse, I was setting the snare back. I was setting it off the fence, but I was setting it back away from the fence, using the wire, probably about, you know, probably 10 inches, something like that, just so it directly wasn't under the fence. And, you know, because animals can do some really crazy things when it comes to snares. So I was getting that away from the horse the best I could. And I look up, and that crazy horse was over there smelling where I just set the snare, which is normal. You know, when an animal doesn't know who you are and you're doing something, when you leave, it goes, checks you out. So it's over there, and then I go and I'm looking at a piece of hair, and I just happen to look up again, and that crazy thing was kind of kicking at the snare with its foot.
It's front foot. And I'm looking at that going, why in the... And as soon as I registered what was about to happen, it was too late. That horse had kicked that snare and it closed just above its hoof. And this was a, it looked like a Palomino horse of some kind, and it was a gilding. And as soon as it felt that tighten on its foot, let me tell you, a 564 snare is no comparison to probably a 900 to 1,000 pound horse. And it snapped it like it was nothing. And there I'm sitting there, and I was probably saying some words that I will not repeat on here, and I was probably saying some very degrading things to the horse as I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. Because I grew up with horses, horses do not trust strangers. And I'm sitting around, and neither one of the old ladies are there. Now they're close to their 80s, so I mean, I don't know what they would help me do anyway. There's no one else around. I'm looking, I'm kind of upset. Now I'm getting kind of nervous trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And I go up and I finally get this horse corralled in this one little bitty stall inside of their makeshift barn. And it's about, I don't know, 6 foot deep, 7 foot deep, 8 foot across, just a one horse thrown together little horse stall. So I get it inside and I close the gate. And then I start looking around for something to get control of that horse because it doesn't have a halter on. And I found a part of an old bridle rope or something. There's only about 4 foot long. Nothing to tie it to. And I'm sitting there knowing good and well when I get inside that stall with this horse, which is already freaking out, and I'm going to close in on him, things are about to get ugly. So I go back to the Jeep and I get 4 extension cables. And I kind of rope those together to make it stronger. And then I use the quick clips, 3 or 4 of them on each end, trying to find a way that I can somewhat control this horse. And it's watching me like, you come in here, big boy. I got something for you. So I open the door. I back it into the corner. I get this thing around its, pretty much below its eyes and its muzzle. And I cinch it down, and then I've already got it tied off to the main post, which I was afraid was going to come out of the ground. And right before I did that, though, guys, you know, I like to think that I'm a decent size, strong, smart man. But I took out my cell phone, and I pre-dialed 911 because if I got in big trouble, at least I could hit send because this was about to get ugly, and it was. So for about 20, 30, maybe 40 minutes, it might have been 3 minutes, I don't know, but it seemed like a long time. I wrestled and wrestled with this horse, trying not to get kicked, hoping it didn't knock the walls out of this building before we got done. Finally, I got it where it kicked its foot, and I was like snapping at the cable with the cable cutters, and I finally hit that thing, and the cable just fell off on the ground. So then I reached up, I pulled the rope off its head, and I back out, and that horse is looking for vengeance by this point. So I go around, and then I take all the snares that I had set, and I move them back off of the fence, probably about 2 feet, and I block it in. So now I'm sitting there thinking, good grief, being nice is not helping my day very much. But that's the story of someone that traps. And if you're looking for adventure, and you haven't been in this very long, it will. I've never in my life caught a horse, and it was obvious that I didn't really catch it. It just kind of broke the cable. Never been. I've snared around all kind of horses and cattle and livestock, but this thing just did something very goofy at one time, and I had to correct it. But that's what you want to talk about, an interesting, adventurous life that comes with someone that goes out and does this stuff. And most people would have no idea that that's even going on anywhere or there's that much adventure with it. So if you're going to be in trapping, you got to put on your big boy britches because something's going to happen and you're going to have to cowboy up sooner or later. So let that be a warning and just to let you know kind of what's going on in my world. So let's get to this game, guys. And this is, I don't want anybody that's listening to this to think that I am putting anybody down. I'm not thinking of any one individual. Actually, not at all. It was just something that I don't know what made me think about this when I went out this morning letting the ducks out and stuff like that. And well, I'll tell you what it was actually, probably what was making me think about this is I listen to a podcast every now and then. It's not one of my favorite ones, but if there's nothing else on, there's a podcast and I've read the book and it's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it's a guy out of Hawaii. And, you know, he's very wealthy now and he teaches people how to be wealthy and he's in that whole stick of stuff. And, you know, his premise was, you know, he had a dad, a real dad, and then he had a dad that through marriage was the one that raised him. One was rich, one was poor. And he uses the example all through the book of what his rich dad thought and what his poor dad thought. And it was pretty interesting. Read just for the simple fact is that's put in a perspective you normally don't think about. His poor dad, believe it or not, had a PhD and was a professor at a college and pretty much, you know, died broke and didn't really have any money, never really gained any wealth, but you know, he had his pension and his salary, and he was in debt and all this type of stuff. And then his dad that raised him didn't follow the same path, but he was an entrepreneur and he was into flipping houses and real estate and apartments and stuff like that. And the lesson that the rich dad would always tell him is you find ways to make money, do something instead of sit it in account in the stock market. So you have that two premises going back to back, and he's going through the whole book and he's explaining what his rich dad would think about risk and what his poor dad would think about risk and what his rich dad thought was important and what his poor dad thought was important. So if you're looking for an interesting book and you have thick skin, because it'll probably kick you in the gonads once or twice, it's a good read. And but that's where this came from. And one of the parts in there was about goal setting. And this morning, the way our weather was supposed to be, I've got like, I don't know, 10 or 12 days before everything starts breaking dormancy, and we bought some ground, and I'm trying to get all my permaculture stuff that I can move over to the new property. So between trapping and the lure business and the mail order business and trying to move trees, and I think we've planted, we're up to over the winter, just part-time, an hour here, an hour there. I probably have planted 500 to 600 trees and bushes over there since then, because we bought it in November. And so I've been humping around, and I thought today was supposed to be clear and nice. And of course, it's rained like a banshee all night, and it's supposed to rain all day today. And because this property has clay and slope, what I was gonna do, it would probably is not gonna work out very well. So I'm kind of like stumble around thinking, well, I could do this and I could do that. And something clicked back to that rich man, poor dad, the way that they looked at things and the way they had focus on something. I realized that my focus was lost because something has changed with the weather of what I was gonna do. And that led me to thinking, because I knew that I was gonna be doing the trapping radio today, how does this apply to trapping? So what I've done is I've got a sheet of paper, well, it's actually three sheets of paper, and I've got on the top successful trapper and not so successful trapper. And the reason I say not so successful trapper, because it doesn't sound as harsh. And the biggest thing that a lot of guys are going to have problem with this is they're going to confuse what I'm considering successful and maybe what they're considering successful. And successful is a personal thing for everybody. So it's not who catches the most animals or makes the most money or gets the coolest pictures or blows everybody away at a fur sale. That's not success or not success to me with a trapper or for anything else for that matter. But what is the person want to do? And when they meet that, is that success? But I will tell you, I do truly believe that success is a myth. Success is a pathway to get somewhere. And as you're going along and stuff starts lining up because you've worked it right, you're successful as far as the game is going your way a little bit more than most because you're doing certain things. And that's where this definition of success comes from. But it's not a hard line by anything. So to me, I've talked to several guys on the phone. They're successful after the first or second year if they catch a coyote. That's success to them. And it's a good success. I mean, you got to catch one for you can catch 100. You know, you got to catch two for you can catch 20. And they hadn't caught one yet. So, you know, their goal is to catch a coyote. That's what makes them successful. Or I've talked to a lot of guys that just want to catch 10 or 15, or they want to get a bobcat to mount. See, so what I'm saying is successful and not successful is not just who catches the most or makes the most or can brag the most or anything like that. So don't get those two confused when we go down through here. But I do think that if a trapper were to listen to this show and think about it from a non-ego point of view, you know, don't let this fall into something where you think that someone's attacking you or you get upset. If you start getting upset at this radio show, just hit pause and go take a walk or something, because it's not meant to. But it may poke at some people in a certain way just because it's going to hit really close to home. And just like me this morning, losing focus on what I was going to do today because the weather changed, it could be making poking at me at the same time. So, you know, try your best not to get upset at what we're going to say. So we have the rich dad and we have the poor dad. And, you know, the rich dad was always thinking, and he was always thinking ahead. Now, the poor dad, you know, was not. He kind of just kind of went along with people said that he should get a degree, so he got a degree. The same people said he should get a PhD, so he got a PhD. You know, it was kind of in the mindset of people with a PhD, now you get a teaching job, now you do the 401k, now you do this, you know, you've got to act like you're successful so you get a house you really can't afford and cars you really can't afford and you get crazy in debt. So what does this mean to a trapper? A trapper that thinks, and I mean truly thinks, not just breathes or not just haphazardly does stuff and really looks and observes at stuff around him, is going to be a very different mindset than a trapper that's not so successful. Because a trapper that's not so successful, you know, he's excited about trapping, but he doesn't really do any prep work where the successful trapper does. The not so successful trapper is probably going to just assume they already know everything they need to know about trapping. Or they let egos get in the way of who they listen to or not listen to or read or don't read or watch or don't watch. And when they're going out trapping, the successful trapper is always going to be observing what he sees. And the not so successful trapper is going to be just blowing off whatever he sees, no matter how obvious it is, because that's the way he does it. And we hear that all the time in trapping. And in a way, I think it's true, but sometimes it's kind of silly. You know, this is the way that I do it. Well, the better question is this the best way that I can do it? Is this the best way to set a trap? Is there a better way to set a trap? Is there a better system to set this trap in? See, that type of mindset is where you're thinking. Now, if somebody goes in and they just automatically do the same thing year after year after year with the same equipment and the same lures and the same locations, and it's just wash, rinse, and repeat over and over and over again, they're probably not thinking very well. The other thing that a thinking successful trapper is going to do is he's going to question. We've talked about this before. He questions everything, absolutely everything. And I'm going to give a quick example about this that hit me yesterday. Now I want you to keep in mind, I try personally to be a thinker. I'm thinking all the time. I try not to do things that are in automatic mode, just because for me it's boring and there's nothing ever happens to it. So let's think about something, and we're going to go into this deeper, guys, if you're in the business course about this. But let's just say that we're planting trees. Now, you may think this has nothing to do with trapping, but I promise you it will, because it's the difference between thinking and normal and standard and maybe finding a breakthrough that really makes a difference. So I'm planting, I think yesterday in the afternoon, I have these smaller persimmon trees so I can plant them a little bit quicker. I finished putting out 100 of those. Where I'm at, for the most part, my auger won't go on the ground. That's how hard the ground is. It's just packed, compacted red clay. When you get down maybe about a foot and a half, it starts breaking up. And then it's got looser soil underneath because that hadn't been compacted as bad. So I've been doing a lot of research, trying to think of the best way to plant these trees, and then how to decompact the soil. And the answer that I've come up with is using a big diversity of cover crops and different things like that that's normal in permaculture, but do it more for heavy tap-rooted stuff that can get air into the soil and allow water to go in the soil. Now, the interesting thing about a cover crop, even on a plant that doesn't have an extensive root system like a corn crop, if you plant certain things and the cover crop puts a hole 3 or 4 foot deep into the soil with its root, a corn plant that's shallow rooted, if a root finds that hole, it will follow that all the way to the end. So all of a sudden, by using a cover crop with corn, you may have roots on corn that's going 3 foot deep, which is pretty amazing if you know anything about corn. And the reason I believe this, the proof of this to me, is I've watched enough video where these guys go out and it's like their thing, and they dig these great big trenches and they follow roots from cover crops and plants, and they're wanting to see how deep the roots go. Because, you know, as far as, you know, being sustainable with water and nutrition and stuff like that. So I'm sitting there and I'm planting these trees and I'm using the auger to break up some of the soil to make this process go faster. I'm trying to find the fastest way to do this. It's still, the tree's in good shape. Well, after about 80 of these persimmon trees, because I'm always trying to think, and I want the trees to be in the best shape, what if, since I bought the property in November, there's no cover crop there to break the soil up so far. It would be awful nice if there was, because I have these channels going into the soil very deep, and the tree roots could find those, and they could easily go down, you know, a seedling tree may put down a root 3 or 4 feet deep, if it's got a way to do it. So I'm looking at that auger, and I've got to thinking, well, good grief. If I'm planting these trees, and if I knew that I had a cover crop that could put these long roots in the ground, and the tree roots will follow the hole from the roots once it rots, and I'm looking over at that auger, and I go, well, why can't I just bury that freaking auger where it's 2.5 feet at the bottom of this hole? Now the roots have got 2.5 feet of no work to get deeper quicker. So I'm like, you know, that makes logical sense to me. So with the rest of the holes, when I dug the holes, I buried that auger all the way up to the motor. So that's probably 2.5 feet below the hole. And I'm thinking about that. I'm like, hey, you know, that's pretty clever. You know, I bet there's some tools or something out there that people are already doing this. So last night, my wife is watching a show that is the bane of my existence, which is called Fashion Runway. So when that's on, I figure out something else to do, and I'm thinking about what I did to the tree. Thinking, keep that in mind, thinking. So I get online and I start looking for maybe how other people are doing this, because not everybody's going to have a $400 auger. Do you know, I could not find anything. of all the thousands of people that plant trees and all the thousands of people that understand that the deeper the roots get, the less stress the tree is going to have during drought. All of the reasons that you would want to do what this came to me as kind of a light bulb moment yesterday, nobody has ever done. Now see, I could not have done that without trying to always think. You know, I have problems with the soil, I need to break it up. When I do this, the advantage is this. So now I can see when I'm planting trees or other plants, I'm just going to run that auger down there as deep as I can get it and give the plant the best chance that it has. But that's from thinking. And then when I went to look on it, there's nobody else out there doing that. And all of a sudden now I'm going, I can't believe that I'm the only person who's ever thought about this. Because I was actually thinking it'd be really cool if I had some type of hydraulic thing that if I'm planting trees, almost like a tractor implement, that it could stab a post in the ground and just pull it back up, almost like a big breaker bar or something, four or five times to give the roots places to go. And I just assumed there'd be a machine out there because it made such common sense. But see, common sense is not common unless everybody in the tribe is doing it. So all the tree planters around, they make these holes really wide to give the roots a place to go, and they spread out in the soft dirt up on top, which means they're very susceptible when you don't have rain. Instead of figuring out a way to beat the problem, which is to get the roots deeper in the ground. So that's thinking. So that's just an example, guys, of thinking. And the same thing happens with trapping. You've got to question and think and try to put different aspects together so you can come up with different things to make your trapping so much better. Now, a lot of this is going to come, because of focusing on trying to do something. But, you know, the successful trapper is going to question, he's going to think, and he's going to observe. The not-so-successful trapper is going to hold on to beliefs no matter what he sees, and he's going to still do the same thing no matter what. And it's kind of painful to me because I've talked to a lot of trappers that are my age and older, and it's clear they still do the exact same thing they did 20 years ago that they do today, and they're not going to change it because they fall back on, that's just how I do it. Instead of asking or thinking about, is it the best way, the quickest way, the most successful way, the higher catch ratio way, anything like that. Not thinking, just doing. Now, focus is one of those that really separates a successful trapper and a non-successful trapper. Most non-successful trappers are excited. They have a lot of energy. They're like a little Tasmanian devil running around all over the place trying to get sets out, but it's not very focused. And we know when you're setting up a line, like we've talked about having a progressive line before, instead of doing the Tasmanian run around with your hair on fire thing, if you're focused on a plan, you can run through that plan, but you've got to stay focused on it. So when you see mink tracks, and it's not mink trapping day, you ignore the mink traps, but you just kind of store it away in your brain. Now, focus is an acronym you can use for focus, is follow one course till successful. So it could be, if you're trying to figure out how to be better at dirt holes, you just hammer on dirt holes until you start getting success with it. So that's focusing on that. Or it could be blind sets or snares or locations or freezing ground, whatever, but you focus, so you're going to follow one course till successful. Focus, if you break that down, if you think about what you're doing, instead of being haphazard. Successful people are very focused. Non-successful people in life and everything else are not focused. They don't focus on very much except maybe what's going to be on TV or what's on Facebook. And that's not the type of focus you want to have. And so it gives the impression that it's easier for successful people to do stuff because they're focused on what they're doing. And then someone that's just kind of spinning around out there, they don't really ever get any traction going any which direction because they're just spinning around and they're busy. So they think that they're doing something, And then meanwhile, someone that's more focused with their trapping is gaining whatever it is to that level of success that, that their definition is. So you've got to think about that. So so think about the focus that you have, if you're going to be successful or non-successful. And this is a conscious decision. A successful trapper will have goals. A non-successful trapper does not. I want to go catch fur. Guys, that's not a goal. I want to go catch as much fur as I can. That's not a goal. I want to go out and see if I can get 100 traps in the ground. That's a goal. I want to catch 20 coyotes in 20 days. That's a goal. But just going out to set traps is not a goal. But think about in your own trapping that you do on a day-to-day basis. Is it goal-oriented? Is it focused for that goal? And for the most part, most trappers would have to honestly say, no, it's not. They're just going out and they're just doing whatever shows up with them at the time, and they spin. They just kind of, you know, a bunch of energy going nowhere. And the goals of that, you've got to know what your goal is, and your goal has got to be very specific. And it needs to be more than one goal over trapping season, I would say, unless it's something like, come hell or high water, I want to catch 300 beaver this year. And we're going to get to a point in a minute why you'll see why that's so important. But you've got to have specific goals. Do you want to catch so many coyotes? Do you want to find, if you're in the live market, do you want to figure out the absolute best way to foothold or foot snare an animal where there's no damage? See, that's a goal. And then you focus on that goal. Now, someone that's not focused is going to continue maybe to get cuts when they shouldn't on a coyote because they don't have any goal towards that. So you got to think about your goals when you're going about your trapping, even preparing for your trapping or thinking about next year's trapping. You've got to have very specific goals. When I was trapping for strictly income only, and that was my only income, guys, I would break it down to the day. And then when the goals would get out of whack, I would know that I would have to adjust somehow or another. So I knew for me to make a house payment and car payments and electric and have food and gas in a truck to go trap and lures and stuff like that off of a budget, which is very goal-orientated, and it gives you a roadmap, I would know I need to catch seven rats today, two beaver, six muskrats, and a bobcat. I would break that down so I would know exactly what I had to do. Now, the reason that was so important on a goal, because if those numbers were going to get me to the monetary part that I needed to keep going as a, quote, professional trapper, I had to make a certain amount of money. And if I broke those numbers down, I knew that if I can have a 20% catch on raccoons and I need 14, what's the number of sets on decent locations I need to have out today so I can have this catch tonight so I can meet that goal tomorrow? Very focused on the way I did that. The same thing with the beaver. I would have it where I know that the catch will go down on new beaver, you know, pretty quick after a couple of days. So to keep this goal that I had in mind, I had to always be moving sets, which was goal orientated to keep up with the main goal, is so I could have money. And then I could follow this roadmap of the goals that, okay, I've got these many locations out. This one's going dead. I need to get new locations out over here so I can get this number back up, or I'm going to miss my daily goal or my weekly goal. And when I broke it down like that, it wasn't as intimidating. So if at the beginning of the year, you just kind of add up, well, my bills are this, and I have to make so much money, and if I can catch 400 raccoons and 200 beaver and 16 bobcats and 32 coyotes, and they average this amount of money, then I'll be okay. Well, see, that's very intimidating for anybody to figure that out. But if you break that down to a goal, it could be you just need to catch 10 animals of this, this, and this combined to meet that goal. Then it's not so bad. Now you're not trying to catch 300 beaver, you're just trying to catch 10 animals of a certain kind at a certain time based on these goals. So that's why the goals is so important. You know, the percentage of your catch, that could be a goal if you're having a whole lot of animals working your sets and you're not catching them. If you focus on that being a goal to really get that down, you can do that. To a non-successful trapper, most of the time they'll see tracks and droppings and then just kind of shrug their shoulders and go on, never give it a second thought because they're doing it the way they do it, and come hell or high water, that's just the way it's going to be. That's not very goal orientated if you're trying to get those numbers up. Successful trappers have systems, guys. Non-successfuls are just willy-nilly when they go about how they do stuff. Systems can be everything of how that you're using equipment in conjunction with putting in sets. You know, like me with the portable pockets or with using drags over stakes or extension cables if I'm in rock. Whenever I come up to that, I already know what the system is because I'm very system orientated when it comes to do that. So I'm not struggling and wasting time on a set. But a non-successful trapper is not going to have a system. He's got a truck full of traps and a bucket full of chain and maybe some grapples and some cables and some trapping wire. And he's trying to jet throw his way through all these different sets as he's going about his daily trap line. And because he doesn't have a system, he probably actually, if you were to break down time value, lost half of his day goofing around trying to figure out how to make something work. But if you've got a system, like for me, if it's soft ground, it's portable pocket, or I can hook to the stake. If it's harder ground and I may have to beat on that thing, I've got the mini portable pockets, and then I use a drag. If it's rocky ground and I know I can't get either one of those in, but I still want to put a set, I've got drags or extension cables that I can use. So I know what these systems are in place. When I would go do the predator control and I was doing a three campaign job for somebody, I knew the first when I went in there it was dirt holes, second time was flat sets, and the last time was very low visibility flat sets and blind sets. So that system allowed me when I went down there, I only set up for dirt holes to get the pups out of the way, and then I went straight into the flat sets to get more of the adults. Then I used the snares and the blind sets to pick up the stragglers when I went back the third time. That system worked very well for me, but if I went down there and I tried to mix all that up, it probably wouldn't go the same because there's not a system in place. You've got to come up with systems, you know, and it could be as simple as if what is your system for setting a 220? It only needs to be one or two ways, and everything you have needs to be set for that. If you're doing pocket sets, how are you doing those pocket sets? How are you digging the pocket? You know, you're not trying to get creative at every other pocket, which is a big downfall to a new trapper, because they go online, they see 54 different ways to make a pocket set. They put out 60 pocket sets the next day and they got 40 different pocket sets. So how in the world do they know which one's actually working for them in their environment? They don't, because they don't have a system. They would need to pick one, use it, get that down, maybe start changing it up, have that be their system, and eventually they tweak that till they can roll through an area pretty freaking quick and do what they need to do because of the system. Now, the other one is you need to know yourself. Know thyself is what I've actually get written down. You need to understand if you're a procrastinator, you need to be honest with yourself about that. If you get lazy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you need to be honest about that. If you really don't know locations yet, you need to be honest with that. If your trap beds are still really wobbly and you're not very good at that, you need to be honest. So you need to know thyself. A successful trapper is not going to lie to himself. A non-successful trapper lies to himself every day he's on a trap line. Yeah, my trap's bedded good, and it's not. Yeah, I know where this is a great location, and it could or could not be, but he's not really taking the time to figure out if it is or not. So you have to know yourself. Successful people are honest about their own downfalls, and then they can use that in their goals and their systems to guard against that. I've been with a lot of guys that are fire-breathing trappers till about 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And then it's kind of like they work harder trying to figure out to get off the trap line and go watch TV or dinner or put up for or whatever it is, because they get tired, they get bored, the whatever it is. And but if you ask them, oh yeah, I trap all day long, every day, man, I'm out there 7 days a week busting it, daylight till dark. But they're not. See, they're lying to themselves. And you can't do that if you're going to be successful. Because if you can't be honest with yourself, who in the world are you going to be honest with? And if you can't be honest with yourself, how in the world are you going to be any better? So you got to keep that in mind. A successful trapper uses great equipment. A not so successful uses the cheapest, junkiest equipment. Now see, that may offend somebody right there. But when you really get to know people that rack up big numbers inside of their systems, they're going to have the greatest equipment that they can to get that done. Now, it may not always be the most expensive. They have different reasons for having different equipment that may not be the most expensive, but to meet their goal, they have the greatest equipment they can. And it's not, and it could be, if you're running a road line and you know that 50% of your stuff is going to get stolen, you're not going to run out there with Jake traps or something and start slinging them around. You have to have some common sense with this stuff. But most of us on a day-to-day basis, that does not happen. And you want to buy the cheapest stuff because trappers are cheap. You want to have the results of someone that uses great traps, but you're not, because you're using cheap traps, and no matter how much you fiddle around with them things, they're always going to be heartbreaks because the way they're put together, they're cheap. And when you, trust me, when you really get to talking to guys that do catch a lot of fur, make a living from fur, they use the very best equipment that they can afford to get the particular job done at the time. That's why you don't see a whole lot of professional coyote trappers trying to run out there and catch coyotes with 1.5 dukes. You can catch coyotes with 1.5 dukes, but you're going to have more problems with it than using something else. So, you know, you keep in mind, cheap does not automatically make it better, guys. It just doesn't. And yeah, you can save some money, but what are you losing down the road? See, a successful person is also thinking ahead. If I lose 20% of the fur, and that 20% of the fur is worth this, what is the cost of using a cheap trap over the course of a season, over a decade, or over a lifetime? Most people would be very well off monetarily from their trapping if they would just use better stuff. But they're so scared to spend money to make money because that's the way that a non-successful person thinks. Successful people understand if you spend money in the right places and you do it for the right reasons and it's the right equipment to use, it'll make you far more money than not spending the money. So it's kind of like what I spend a dollar to make 10, or would somebody in a not successful person would want to spend 50 cents to make a dollar? Well, they go, well, I'm still going to double my money. See, that's the way that a non-successful person thinks. I would much rather have a lot of $10 bills coming back for a dollar investment than the 50%, because the percentages are a whole lot better, and you only have a certain amount of animals that you're going to be around to catch in a season. So if you're using junky equipment, you're going to get junky results. And that's a life lesson in anything. When it comes to lure and baits, successful trappers use really good lure and baits. Non-successful trappers trying to figure out where they can save a dime when they're buying it, or they want to come up with some half-assed concoction from the grocery store that may or may not work. And if they catch a animal or a handful of animals on there, they automatically go, well, see, that's just as good as the other stuff. And it's not most of the time. So successful trappers are going to use good lures and baits, and non-successful trappers try to figure out a way to, just like the junky traps, you get junky results. and you're going to have to figure that one out on your own. A successful trapper is always going to have his lines planned out ahead of time. You know, and this goes a lot deeper, and this could be some of the military background I've got, but you always have option A, B, and C, then those that have options A, B, and C. So if I'm running a line and it starts flooding and I'm water trapping, is there a place I can go to higher ground to get out of the flooding? So that would be, you know, option A on line A. Or if there's no fur there or whatever. I put contingencies in place so when something happens, I don't have to think about it the same way. I don't have to try to figure something out at the same time. So my lines are planned out. And it's just like in the military. One of the things that was very interesting in the military, when you first start doing missions, is you've got 10 guys in a squad. You're going to go attack an objective. Okay, this is how we're going to do it. This is where we're going to go. This is our timeline, this, that, and the other. And then the guy that's been in the Army a while looks around and goes, okay, your LT's dead. Who's in charge? And everybody kind of looks around. Holy crap, I guess that would be Bob. Okay, Bob's in charge. Now, if he gets shot, who's in charge? Oh, I don't know. So then you come up with that. Okay, you're going to attack this objective. You went through the best concealment part of the route, but now you're 3 miles through some nasty swamp and bamboo and briars, and two of you get shot. How are y'all going to get them out? Oh, didn't think about that. What if he didn't get shot, but he breaks his leg? How are y'all going to get him out of there? Oh, don't know. What if you come across a someone in the field that's a watch guard that's 1,000 meters out and you have to confront him? What is your plan to do that? I don't know. Well, you see what I'm saying? The plan was very simple. 10 guys going through the woods to kill some people. All of a sudden now you've got to have all these subsets of plans. And you need to be doing your trap line the same way. So if Beaver presses tank, you can go to the other option. But if you don't plan for that option, you're going to be doing what a lot of non-successful trappers do in the course of the season, which is pretty much doing something somewhere, somehow, trying to get something going, which is kind of the way it works for a lot of guys. You know, if you're planning to go to so-and-so's property and they sell it, well, that was my whole plan. Well, I mean, that's not planning. If I was going to, if your truck breaks down, what are you going to do? I mean, this is where the planning comes in part. And see, successful people understand how powerful this is. Non-successful people don't plan, and they don't have subsets of their plan. And when something happens on your trap line, which is going to happen every year, you can lose so much momentum and so much money and so much of your catch just because you're spinning around trying to figure out what you're going to do now. And then most of the time you don't pick the best options because you haven't planned for those options. So you've got to keep that in mind. One of the biggest things, and if someone has been with me trapping, they'll tell you this, one of the biggest sticklers I have is I've learned a long time ago, successful people are optimists. And that's a mindset, guys. An optimist is just someone that decides to find the brighter side of things. It's not genetic. It's not the way you were raised. It's not where you come from. It's not all this. If you're a grumpy butt, always mad, always looking at the downside, always all, that is a choice that you make on a daily basis to be a grumpy butt. And non-successful people are grumpy butts. Most successful people that I know are optimists. So if you're going to be looking at this thing from a thinking man's point of view, and you can see that optimists are better at success and grumpy butts are not, why in the world would you stay being a grumpy butt? It just doesn't make sense. You're cutting your own throat. Now, could it be habit over time? Yeah, you can change habits. There's no excuse whatsoever for someone being a grumpy butt all the time. Being, you know, we all know the guys we're talking about. They walk in a room and just all the energy sucks out of it. You know, man, that's a good catch today. You caught 450 coyotes in one day. Man, that's great. No, it sucks, man. I should have had 500. Man, I'm just depressed. I can't believe I had 500 coyotes. God damn, I don't know what to do. And, you know, or someone else does something good and they automatically go into tearing it down. Well, if I had that line, I could do better. Or I would. Anybody could do that if they were trapping there. You know what I'm talking about. Grumpy butt is a choice. And non-successful people, that's where they're at. So if you're finding yourself having negative thoughts all the time, you need to have a serious come to Jesus meeting with yourself about it. Because unless you just are planning on being non-successful, you need to change that. And all the excuses of that's just how I am, get that stuff out of your head because it's not real. It's really not. Okay, so a successful trapper vets information, and a non-successful trapper most of the time is a content chaser. So if when I'm looking at information when it comes to sets or listening to other trappers, I'm vetting that information. That doesn't mean that I'm smarter or better or anything else. I'm trying to get the BS out of the way to see if there's any really meat on the bones. Now, content chasers are guys that go to form after form after form and DVD after DVD after DVD and book after book, and they set it every demo, and they're getting ready for whatever. They're getting ready for the trap line that for next year or 5 years or whatever. It's always getting ready for. And if you ask them, how come you're not doing it now? They're always going to tell you the same excuse, but in different words. I don't have the resources, the education, or the time. Anybody that gives you any type of excuse, or if you catch yourself doing that too, that is always the main thing. You don't have the resources, you don't have the time, or you don't have the education. And most of the time, especially in today's age, you got plenty of education, but you're too busy chasing content. You're thinking, you're looking for that one nugget that all of a sudden the sun's going to open up and the clouds going to open up and the sun's going to bright this, you know, moonbeam to you, and you're going to have rainbows following you around as everything on your trap line falls in place if you just find that little extra bit of information. No, dude, go set traps. Go get something done. Make it happen. That's how you do it. Content chasing is not going to make you a better trapper. A successful trapper is going to also understand how to eat an elephant, which goes a lot back to the goal setting things. You know, the old saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. That's the way that I look at everything, whether it be trapping or the permaculture farm that I'm starting or doing some other stuff that I'm trying to work on the internet. I just chew on it all the time. And eventually, the elephant gets eaten. And somehow the elephant is gone, and somehow you reach that goal. But it's because you understand how to eat that elephant. So if you're wanting to go out and catch 500 beaver, you've got to figure out how to chew that up. How do you set the traps faster? How do you get more locations? How do you get better at permission? What's the most efficient routes to do that? All that is taking little bitty bites out of that elephant. Now, a non-successful trapper pretty much just throws his hands up. It's a big task. How in the world am I going to do that? If I had more time, more resources, and more education, I'd be able to do it. But I don't, so how am I going to? Oh, there's just no use. And you throw your hands up and you walk away. That's what a non-successful person and trapper does when they come up against something that's big. They don't understand how you eat the elephant. You don't start off catching 1,000 coyotes. You don't start off catching 1,000 beaver or 1,000 coon or 1,000 muskrats. It doesn't work that way. You've got to go out and you've got to put in your time and get your own experience, and you got to do that. That's eating that elephant. So every one of those muskrats that you learn how to catch and get better at is eating part of that elephant, if that's what your goal is, to catch 1,000 muskrats. So don't be afraid of the elephant, just start chewing on him. A successful trapper, guys, is going to be somebody that knows how to manage their money and their expenses while they're trapping. A non-successful trapper has no clue what they're spending or what they're making or anything like that. And this can go, even going back to the goal setting, you'll see, you'll hear me saying that a lot of times. The goal setting part of this, if you know you need more traps and you don't have the money for it, then you figure out a way to go get more money, whether it be a part-time job or you start a business, is exactly what I would advise everybody to do. But you figure out a way to get that money to get that. So when the season comes, you take the excuse of not having equipment off the table. But that goes through managing money. If you need more traps and you're wasting money because you're going out to eat every day for lunch, and if you were to figure that up over the cost of the total of the year, start eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You've got to manage that. It's not going to come. There's no trap fairy that is just going to show up and give you a truck full of money or traps one day. You've got to manage that, and you have to manage your expenses. You know, you've got to figure out ways to save money as far as your fuel and your vehicle and tires. And you don't go out mudding every day to go set traps, because the expense part of getting all that mud out of your gearbox and all the destruction of that eventually is going to catch up with you, and it's going to take it all away. So that's understanding your expenses and all that. But a non-successful trapper most of the time has no idea what they spend or what they make. Because if you don't know how much your expenses are, you never know how much you make. It's just a basic way of thinking. Successful people and trappers are long-term thinkers. Non-successful people and trappers are short-term thinkers. They think in the moment. They think about what's going on today or just this week. And successful trapper, like I said, he's got his lines planned out. He's got his equipment lined out. He's got his permissions lined out. And the only way that you're ever going to get there is you start thinking about the future. If you wanted to eventually get to be a professional trapper where you make your living from either ADC or fur, you've got to think about that long term. Because there again, there's no trapping fairy that's going to wave a wand and all of a sudden you're on a galloping unicorn going around and all of a sudden you're now a professional trapper. It's got to be long term thinking. But most people are waiting for the unicorn. Because and then they on their daily lives, they just do whatever, and it's short-term thinking, and it's very hedonistic way of thinking. And I think I went into that on one of the podcasts. You know, don't be a heathen. Don't think like a heathen. Think about something besides just right now. Okay. And now, how are you going to, without long-term thinking, how are you going to handle distractions? Because this is a big one, guys. This is a really big one. I think I'm going to come back to this one at the very end. Successful trappers always going to be getting high quality information and education, and a non-successful trapper most of the time is just going to take whatever information comes and believes it. He doesn't vet it. A successful trapper is going to take informed risk and think them through and understand what's going on and understand the reward and the possible failure of that and what's that mean in long-term goal. And a non-successful trapper, when they're thinking out their line, they don't think that far ahead as far as how far you can push yourself or how you're going to put up your fur. And different things like that, because most guys are just so concerned about catching the fur, and if they really have a couple of good days or a week, they don't have any idea or any way to handle the managing of that fur. So now they're making decisions based off of something that's not planned out. So you've got to think all this stuff through. Okay, we're getting kind of late on time, but I want to go back to this: how you handle details and decisions on a daily basis. If you're a long-term thinker you understand where you want to go. So the way I want to describe this is you have A decisions and activities and B decisions and activities. So an A decision or activity is in line with your long-term goals. So if you're trapping, a very simplistic way of saying this, if you're wanting to catch, say 500 beaver, or 5 beaver for that matter, and you're struggling with it, and your long-term thinking says that's your goal and that's what you plan for, and then all of a sudden you hear that your buddy sold raccoons for a few more dollars than you thought about, and then what is your decision and what is your action from that information? Now, see, a non-successful person will probably start chasing raccoons. A successful trapper that has got a goal and has got this stuff planned out, that's good information. Thanks for telling me this, that, and the other, but it's not meeting my long-term goals. So I'm not going to waste my energy or my decision or my activities on something. So if you're out beaver trapping and all of a sudden you come across a bunch of raccoon sign or mink sign or something like that, but your goal is to catch 500 beaver, and then you see that and you start going, well, I'll just set a few traps over here. And then, you know, that last creek I was just on, man, I could go set a few traps over there. And then all of a sudden now you're doing B activities because they're not meeting your long-term goals. But a non-successful trapper lives in the world of B activities and decisions. Because again, it's just like you're spinning around, going every which direction, bouncing off the walls, and you're not going towards a particular goal. Because all this stuff seems very important at the time. But a successful person sees his long-term goals, and he can very quickly go, I want to catch 500 beaver. The mink trapping is not going to help me catch the 500 beaver. Therefore, I don't worry about the mink. Now, once I meet that goal, and if there's time left in the season, I can come back and try to catch those mink. But it's not meeting that goal right now. So that trapper that's thinking that way is going to be using A decisions and A activities to meet that goal. And a non-successful trapper most of the time is going to go, hey, mink trap, squirrel, go, run over there. Let me go back to the house and get some traps. I can catch that thing. He burns all that time and it didn't help him meet his goal of whatever that is. So you've got to really think about that. That's one of the biggest things I believe that most trappers get discouraged and they get disheartened when they're trapping is they do so many B activities and they don't do enough of the right A activities. You know, if I go out and I'm trying to test a new set or a new piece of equipment or anything like that, if that is my goal and I've set that up as my goal to figure out this new system, anything that's not in that system is a B activity and a B decision. And I'm pretty good at going, that does not help me meet my goal, therefore it's not important. And this is one of those things in business that most people struggle in business is because they don't think from the future point of view of what their goal is, even very long term at all. So when something happens that seems important, it's not because it's not helping you meet your goal. You know, Warren Buffett, everybody knows who he is. Do you know he does not have an email, a Facebook, an Instagram? He does not do anything online or the computer. Do you know what he does is he focuses on his investments. He goes into a building, into a conference room with his team, and they go over data. They don't get caught up in what's going on Facebook. He doesn't get caught up in what's going on this. He's probably one of the richest men in America today because he focuses on managing his money and investments. Everything else is a distraction. And if you read anything from Warren Buffett, he's very clear on that. The reason most people do not ever gain any wealth is because they have no idea where they're going, and they take all these little side roads trying to get somewhere that they're not sure what it is. And by doing that, they wasted all their energy and their time on stuff that really doesn't matter. They live in the world of B decisions and B activities. Successful people are A decisions and A activities. You know, and it could be a better way of saying that, where say like B decisions and activities are wasting time on stuff that really doesn't matter. You could come up with some acronym, and A is doing the right thing to meet your goals. And when you see other things that are trying to compete with that, and if you try to share your time and your energy, you don't go forward on your main goal, and you're going to lose most of the time. So really think about when you're, no matter what you're doing, guys, whether it be your life, your business, in your trapping, everything like that, think about what we've talked about today. Because successful people think and act a certain way, and non-successful people, which aren't dumber or stupider or ignorant, they just act and think a certain way. And the successful people seem to get more successful, and the non-successful people usually get less successful, or they just try to stay at a norm, and that's because of the way that they think and they act and they react to stuff. Because you can get blown up. You don't know how many times or how many hours I've seen people get on Facebook and spend hours arguing over something when they should be out trapping. Now, the last thing I want to say is go have fun and don't be a grumpy butt and enjoy yourself.